I am. And he begins to tell him, y'all, you are Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus looks at him and says, the flesh and blood hath not revealed this unto thee, but you're sensitive to the spirit. You have gotten a hold of this. You have a revelation of who I am. But at the same time, just a few verses later, we see here now that he's having to rebuke him again in Matthew 16 and 23. He went from praising him to rebuking him as he said, get behind me, Satan. You have no idea what you're talking about. You have no idea what you're doing. You think you have it all figured out, but you don't have a clue what's really going on this earth. And he calls the very man that he says, I give unto you the keys of the kingdom. Just about 10 verses later, he rebukes him and calls him Satan. Now, that's pretty harsh. But he was confused. He had ideas that were not right. And if he would have held on to those ideas, he would have never become the man that God wanted him to be. James and John, the sons of thunder, they stood and they looked at the town and said, let's call fire down from heaven because they don't want anything to do with this. And Jesus turns and he rebukes them and says, you don't even know what spirit that you are of. You're dealing with a spirit that's not of me. You have opened yourself up to something that is not right, and there's something that's not right in your spirit. I'm not here to destroy cities. I'm here to save cities. But you've got a spirit of anger on you. You've got a spirit of wrath on you. You've been disrespected. Your feelings have been hurt. And now because you feel disrespected, you're willing to call down and want to destroy an entire city because your little feelings got hurt. And Jesus calls them out on it and says, you better fix it because you're in the wrong spirit. You see, when God speaks to us, when God pricks our spirit, when God deals with us about something, if we will deal with it on our own, in our own closet, behind closed doors, you can rest assured he won't have to deal with it later. I think that a lot of the junk that we go through in our lives and a lot of the stuff that we deal with is because we refuse to change all by ourselves. And so Jesus says, I'm going to have to help you to change. Cain was not an evil man. Cain showed up to church. Cain was there to worship. Cain brought what he thought was best, what he thought was something that could be worship, or could be a sacrifice unto God. He brought that to God. He wanted to bring this. It was the best that he had, that he thought in his mind he was doing it right his way. And God said, no, you're not doing it right. This isn't what I want. This isn't what I ask for. I ask for a lamb. I ask for but I don't do sheep. That's not what I do. I don't do sheep. I till the land. I make watermelons and pumpkins. I've got apple trees, and I've got, look at these watermelons that I've brought. Look at this grapefruit that I've this is my best. This is what I want to give you. And God said, I don't care what you want to give me. I only care what I've asked for you to give me. I don't care what your interpretation of living for me is. My only worry and my only desire and the only thing I care about is what I have interpreted it to you, how I want you to live. So this man shows up to church. He comes to worship God, but he's come on his own terms. And that's the world we live in today. We want to worship God on our own terms. We want to live for God on our own terms. We want to serve God on our own terms. We want to be who we want to be, and God kind of fit around our world and our stuff and our desires and our wants. And all the while, God is saying, you don't understand. I don't fit in your world. You've got to fit in my world. I don't come to where you are and change the way I do things so that you can be comfortable. I will love you. I will hold you. I will never let you go, but I will never change for you. If you're going to be saved, you're going to have to make up your mind. I've got to conform my life with his life. I've got to change the way I think and the way I do things to conform to the way that he thinks and the way that he does things. So he warns Cain, Cain, you have messed up. Be careful. Sin lieth at the door. It's crouching there. There's a lion that wants to destroy. Be careful. He warned him. And what did Cain do? He just pushed right on through and kept going. God is constantly warning us. He's constantly checking our spirits. He's constantly trying to work on us. He's constantly, if there's something that comes to your mind and it's constantly bothering you about something that's in your life, and we just keep pushing it off and pushing it off and pushing it off and pushing it off and pushing it off, and we think, well, it's just us. It's not that big of a deal. We look over at Sally Sue and she does it, and but God keeps messing with us about it, and we keep trying to stay distracted, and we keep trying to do our own thing, and we keep, it's, you better rest assured God's been reaching and tapping. Hey, this situation in your life, I need you to get rid of it, because there's going to come a day the trumpet will sound. There's going to come a day that you're going to need my mercy and grace, and it's here for you today. You've got to act on it today. But here, wait, we need you to change. We need something to happen. We need something to be different. What is your relationship with truth in your life? Sometimes it's just predicated upon who it comes from. You know, sometimes we can be more worried about what society thinks about us than what God thinks about us, or what society knows about us rather than what God thinks about us. What is my relationship with truth? When truth comes to you, when truth finally gets in your face, when truth finally has to raise up and say, this has got to stop, or there's a situation that begins to try to work some of that stuff out of you, you can rest assured that God has tried thousands of times to try to get your attention before he goes and steps into a place that he says, if need be, I will help you. Sometimes it's just all depending upon where it came from. If the preacher preaches it, he's just excited. That's not that big of a deal. It's really not for me. If it's a spouse that brings it up, and the spouse says something about it, and we get mad about it. Well, and the person that loves you the most is, but that's, you know, and did you know that when I get the most frustrated in my marriage is when my wife points out areas of my life that I need to fix, and I know they need to be fixed. She doesn't say, you need to fix this. She's like, hey, you need to go in there and clean your closet. And I can get fired up about it. Why? Because I come to the realization, the stuff that I get the most frustrated about, it's because I already know that it's a fault and it's already a problem and it's already right there on the very edge of being going off to begin with. And so if you've got something that all it needs is a little scratch, I see women clapping it goes both ways, ladies, and so if there's something that it doesn't take much to set you off, it's because you already know that it's an issue in your own life and you're as frustrated with it as they are, but you haven't done anything to change that situation. Now for men it might be cleaning, for women it might be a totally different area. Now, that doesn't mean y'all get to go home this afternoon and be like, oh, look right here, Brother Pugh said, you're going to get in there and clean that closet. And I'm glad my wife's not in here, but she'll listen to this later. And she'll be, yeah, you already know, get in there and take care of your stuff. But we've got to understand, sometimes depending on who it comes from makes us even madder, makes us even more frustrated. The other day I was trying to help a young man. He doesn't go to this church. And so I took an example of somebody that was in the exact same place he was at another church doing the exact same thing. And I thought, if I can get him to see the fault in this one over here, then maybe he'll begin to see the fault in the situation where he's at right now. And as I begin to explain the situation at another church thousands of miles away with another young man, and instead of him seeing what the fault was, he began to take that man's side, and nobody else understood what he was going through except for him. Sometimes when we begin to see faults in our lives and we begin to see things, we can justify them easier than we can change them. I was listening yesterday as I was driving. I like to listen to books on tape or CDs and when I'm driving down the road and different things. And a pastor was talking about counseling. And he pastors a very large church. And he made the statement. He said, the moment that I know that I'm marriage counseling and they are not interested in changing themselves, but they just want me to be the referee in the middle of it, he said, I will never see them again. He said, because my time is too valuable to sit there and listen to them bicker and fight over what's going on in their lives, and neither one of them intend to change. They just want the other one to change to be more, to fit their situation. He said, until they're ready to change, whether the other one changes or not, I will not sit back down with them and listen to what they have to say again, because all they're interested in is me picking sides and trying to get the other one to fix themselves. He said, it doesn't matter if the other one is completely in the wrong. Until you are willing to begin to focus on yourself, that marriage will never be healed anyhow. And he says, I don't have the time anymore to sit for hours and hours and referee between people who refuse to change. And if since they're not going to change, it's not going to last anyhow. And I said, wow, that's pretty serious right there. We've got to be willing to change ourselves. This last trip, you drive across the Sabine River and you better have your head on a swivel because there are deer and critters running everywhere. I smacked a skunk, and that's always wonderful. If you want to get woke up this morning, just walk out by my truck, get down on the right side and hands and knees and just get a big whiff this morning. You'll be wide awake. You'll be ready to mow the yard. And not but a few hours later, I decided I was going to kill my first deer with the bumper of my truck. We've worked on it, you know, and if you don't really go and look, you can't tell that one side was popped out and this is cracked and that was cracked. And we've kind of doctored it up a little bit, and it looks good from a distance. Everything seems all right. You get close enough, it smells real bad and it's got some serious issues going on. But from a distance, everything looks good. That's the way we like to do it. If I can make sure everything looks good from a distance, then we're all right. But God's not looking at us from a distance. It says the word is what? It cuts a two-edged sword. It's doing surgery. It's working. Doctors don't do so. Now, I heard about a doctor that did it from Wi-Fi from Chicago all the way over in Africa, all right? Now, and that's the way we want God to work on us. You stay over there, and we'll stay over here, and I'll get Julio, and he'll tell you what's wrong, and then you worry about that. That's not the way God works. He's hands-on. He's right in the middle of it. He's checking it all out. That's not right. This isn't working right. That's not going right. And so we can't just expect him to be from a distance, but we want to keep him at a distance. But that's not how he works. And then we get frustrated because he won't leave us alone. And instead of embracing him, we just keep running and trying to keep him at a distance. And we keep the dance going and trying to stay away from him. And all the while, he's trying to be close to us because that's where he does his best work. Stop running and embrace him. Nathan shows up at David's house. Nathan was trusted by David. David came to Nathan and said, hey, I want to build a temple. And Nathan said, God will like that. He didn't even pray about it. He said, that's a good deal. That's a good thing. Man, God's going to like that. We need a temple. You know, there's just some things you don't feel like you need to pray about. Man, that's perfect. And then he goes home and God speaks to him and says, you spoke too soon, Nathan. I need you to go back and say, he can't build the temple, but I am going to build him a house for all that he's done for me. I'm not going to let him build the temple, but I will bless him in the midst of all of this. And so David trusted Nathan. Nathan was could hear from God. Nathan was a prophet of God. And when Nathan walks in and begins to talk to David, and he trusted Nathan. He understood that Nathan cared about him. He understood that Nathan loved him. He understood that Nathan was always going to be trustworthy. And even when Nathan was wrong, he was man enough to come back and say, I messed up. That's not what God said. Let's change this. David understood that Nathan could be trusted. But when Nathan walked into the presence of the king that day, he had news that would get him killed in any other courtroom in the world at that time. He had news. He was going to call out something that anywhere else would have been a problem. He was going to be in trouble for it. And he didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't even know how to approach David by it. He might have just been making things up as he went along. If he'd have walked in there and be like, David, you've messed up. David, you're a murderer. David, you did this. David, you fooled around, did that. If he would have just gone in there and did that, I imagine David would have, who knows how David would have responded to it. He went in and just, you know, I want to tell you a story about a fella. He had one sheep, and that sheep was like a daughter to him. And he took that sheep and raised it and loved it, and that was the only sheep he had. And then there was another man that had a sheep, and he had lots of sheep. And you know, and that man had a traveler come, and instead of going through his sheep, he decided he was going to steal another man's sheep. And David starts getting angry. He says, man, somebody stole a sheep. See, I'm fixing to show you Bible for why I know that when I get frustrated about things in my life and I respond irrationally about them, why I know that it's a fault and a weakness in my life that needs to be changed. Because when Nathan looked at David and said, David, this man stole a sheep, David said, kill him. Kill him. Nowhere in the Bible does it ever say that a sheep stealer should be killed. But when it's you, when it's pointing its finger at you, when God is reaching down and saying, hey, you need to fix this in your life, and instead of saying, well, he responds the exact, it's right there, it's on edge, he's frustrated, he's already angry. It didn't matter that he faked it for a year. It didn't matter that he still went to church for a year. It didn't matter that nobody knew what he had done. All that it mattered is that it was still there and driving him crazy. He couldn't sleep at night. It messed with him. Every time he saw something, it was there. He couldn't get away from it. And when Nathan said he stole a sheep, he said, kill him. Because it was always right there on the surface. I went to church with a man that his wife did some terrible things. And in the midst of his wife doing all the stuff she was doing, he began to do things. It was one of the craziest stories. It's in a little bitty town in Lufkin, Texas. And it just, it's something they make movies about. It was crazy. And she commits suicide the day after she prayed through. It was just weird, and all of these things. And he's the drummer, and he's still playing the drums. And a year later, and he's there. He plays the drums every service, come to find out, a year later, something was opened back up. Something was said that sparked one of the investigators' thoughts. He went back and reopened the case and began to look around. And he called him in for questioning. When he walked into that room, he spilled his guts and told everything. He said, I killed her. I'm the one that did it. I murdered my wife. And I remember he was saying that I, every time that you got up to preach, Brother Scoggins, it was like you were walking right up to my pew and preaching straight to me. It wasn't like anybody else was in the room, but you were preaching to me. I would go home at night and take a pistol and think about blowing my own brains out. But all I could hear is you walking straight to my pew and preaching to me. He said, I had to get clean. I had to get it off of my chest. I could not keep living this way. An entire year, one day playing the drums, coming to church, acting like everything was okay, but couldn't sleep at night because there was something that needed to be fixed in his life. And we say, well, I don't have anything that major. When it comes to sin, when it comes to that trumpet, when it comes to me standing in his presence and him saying, well done, thou good and faithful servant, then it's all serious. It's all serious, whether it's a white lie or whether it's the biggest thing that I could do, whether it's just taking a dollar out of somebody's purse or whether it's swindling my company for millions. It all has the same end result when it comes to salvation. We've got to understand that we've got to be honest with ourselves, because if we will be honest with ourselves, then we can be happy, we can have peace, we can find joy, we can find love. If we can be honest with ourselves, if I can sit in His presence and say, God, this is what I did. This is what's happened. God, I looked at this. God, I said that. God, I responded this way. God, I did this. Then He will be merciful. I'll probably go more in depth in the story of David here in a couple of weeks, but it's amazing the story and the mercy of God in the midst of all of that. But we've got to understand that there has to be a dramatic change in our lives, that it can't just be how good do I look from 100 yards away. It's how good do I look when He opens me up and He looks around on the inside. Am I right? Am I good? Is everything all right? What needs to be fixed in my life? Not what you need to change to fit my life, God, but God, what do I need to change to fit your life, God? What motivates you to change this next year? What is it in your life that is motivating you to be different? Has somebody told you need to be different? Has the Word revealed it unto you that there needs to be change? Or is it something that you know every day that you live that these areas of my life need to be changed? How is my relationship with truth? How is it? How does it affect me? Am I influenced by my truth? Because my truth is scary. Our truth as human beings can change every day. It can change based upon the emotions that you're feeling right now. It can change upon how mad you are at me because I've said something in this service that you're angry about, and it really doesn't have anything to do with me. It's God saying, hey, I need you to work on this area right here. It can be based upon anything. Yeah, we can take it and twist it and move it and try to make it fit and try to, you know, and the truth of the matter is it my truth or is it His truth? Is it my truth or is it the truth? Is it my truth or is it absolute truth? There's some things that are absolute truth, and then there are other things that I just need to change in my life. If my marriage is going to work, there's things that have to be changed. If you're going to keep your job, there are things that are going to have to be changed. If you're going to pay your bills, there are things that are going to have to be changed. If you're going to have a good relationship with your children, there are things that are going to have to be changed. There are some things that have to change in your life. And if you want God to help, you've got to understand when He speaks, I've been struggling with this for a year, but God, this year I want to make some changes. This year I want something to be different. This year I want to take some of the obstacles that are hindering me from being what it is that God's called me to be. If I just made enough money, then everything would change. No. If you're paycheck to paycheck now, you'll find a way to live paycheck to paycheck then. If you're making $250 a week when you were in high school, and then you're making $500 a week, and you were paycheck to paycheck, and it doesn't matter if you made $2,000 a week, $3,000 a week, $10,000 a week, you're just going to elevate your level of living to the exact same way that you've always been living because you've never changed. You look at those NFL football players, they can't go on strike because they've got bills next month that have to be paid, and they have already wiped out every bit of the money they've got in order to make the bills on that Bentley and that house and that Ferrari and everything else. They went from college where they were getting slipped $500 under the table to now they've got $5 million, but they've already spent it because they have not changed. They've just got more money to play with. Nicodemus came to Jesus by night, and Jesus gave him truth. And then it was up to Nicodemus to decide what he was going to do with truth. God gave him truth, and Nicodemus sat there and said, how in the world am I supposed to be born again? and he left, and there was something inside of him that would not let him go. God slid some truth into his life that he understood that it didn't matter that he was the most elevated person in that city, that he was one of the top three richest people in that city. It didn't matter that he had influence with everybody in that city. There was something inside of him that said, it's not right. And that's why you see Nicodemus with 100 pounds of myrrh and alloy as he's walking up to the cross when Joseph of Arimathea is standing there trying to take the body down, because there was something inside of him that said truth is more important than what everybody else thinks or knows. That's why when the historians say that he lost everything because of his belief, he came to a place that the truth in his life was more important than what his comfort was. Truth. What is your relationship with truth? Not just doctrine, but truth. The truth that's going to make your marriage work. The truth that's going to make your children follow after God. The truth that's going to help you be saved. The truth that's going to help you keep your job. How is your relationship with the things that need to be changed in your life? Lord Jesus, I ask you right now that your spirit would move and flow in this place. Lord God, that your will and your way would be done. God, that we would accept truth, that we would grab on to truth. God, that you would speak to us, oh God, that we would conform our lives to the way that you desire for us to live. Lord, that your spirit would move and flow in us and through us, that you would lead us, that you would guide us, that you would help us, and that you would change us in Jesus' name. I had a man sit in my office one day. I was working at a church, and he looked at me and he put it all on the table, and I said, "You're wrong." And he looked at me and he said, "Well, God will just have to find a way to forgive me of it." And I thought, God doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to do one thing. Not one, because he's God and God all by himself. He made the rules. He's the one that created this earth. I only get to my heart to beat for the next 30 seconds because he allows it to. I only get to take the breath I just took because he allowed me to. He doesn't have to do anything. Oh, God, that we would be conformed to your will and your way, God, that your spirit would move and flow in our lives, that, God, that you would speak to us today, oh God, because revival starts with repentance, God, that revival starts at a place where we can say, God, I empty it all out on the table, I give it to you, God, forgive me, God, I'm sorry, God, I'm not right, God, I'm not where I need to be, God, there are things in my world that nobody else knows about because I keep everyone at a distance, but you know, God, that there are some areas of my life that need to be changed in Jesus' name.